PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the Original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is the founder of Red Rooster Golf, Kerry. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Yeah, it is a good morning. It was a late night. This is pre-recorded, so by now, when this actually goes live, the results will be in, and there will be a World Series champion. But being that you're an Ontario guy, we already had the chat. You're Jay's guy. You're lacking sleep the same way I am, right?
Oh, man. Just, I'm in a fog.
I mean, that's, yeah, it was a late one. We're just coming off game three. I hope they don't do that to us again, but you never know. Yeah. What a show.
Yeah. It's been such a great series. Amazing. Like such great storylines. It's incredible to watch Ohtani. Like, he is such a talent. Of course, Freeman's the big game player, and but to go 18 innings, that was a marathon.
I was banking on 19 at one point. I figured may as well get the day started at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Well, either way, it's great to have you on. Obviously a fun time to get you here, but what I'd love to do is really get started talking about your story in golf and how you ended up at this point. So I know you played a bit of golf growing up. You went in a bit of a different direction from there. What's gotten you to this point so far?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I started the game, I remember, at New Market Golf Club. It was in the summer. I got three brothers and a sister. I got a big family. In the summers, parents had to just keep us busy. And I remember getting this family membership to New Market Golf Club. My dad would drop me and my brother off. We'd have like a cooler that they'd like let us put in the fridge with. We'd be there all day, and we'd just loop around this golf course. We didn't really know what we were doing, and we enjoyed that. That was sort of the first exposure. And then it was a number of years before I really got into it and started playing. My brother, we moved to Ottawa. My brother started working at a golf course, working in the back shop. And later on, he got me a job working in the back shop, you know, cleaning clubs and picking the range and all that, just sort of being around it. But I didn't really get the bug until I was 16. When I was 15, I worked full time on a sheep farm, and I worked there 6 days a week, and it was really long days, and I didn't play any golf. And I remember coming off that year, and some of my friends had really started to pick up the game and started to play. And if I kind of wanted to connect with them, I'd have to get into it. So the next year I skipped the sheep farm. I got a job at McDonald's, and it was super flexible. So I used to ride my bike or get dropped off. It was in, at Kanata Lakes Golf Club in it's now Kanata Golf Club, part of Club Link, and great golf course, Thomas McBroom design, and just a lot of juniors out there. And we just used to, you know, loop around. And that was the first summer that I would call played golf. Like, I had been exposed to it. I played every once in a while. I wasn't super passionate about it. I enjoyed it. I tried everything, you know. I played every sport, soccer, baseball, etc., always hockey, and cross country running, and just anything I could get into. But I really got that bug at 16. It was just that there was a bunch of juniors around, and we would play a lot. There were some really good players, and I got to really work on my game. And by the end of that summer, I was breaking 80. And then I had the bug. The next year was the first year I did play in some like local tournaments. There were some like Ottawa Valley Golf Association tournaments. I played in some of those, sort of dabbled, but I didn't really start competitive golf till I was 17. And I remember, but still just local. But I was starting to break 80 consistently, and, you know, could shoot a 75, and keep it around par some days and started playing competitively and really enjoyed that. I think even just the individual aspect of it, the sort of like grind, and kind of got hooked. And from there, you know, I started playing competitively, was able to get a golf scholarship to Kentucky State University, had an incredible experience there, had this amazing coach, Ralph Pardue, and an amazing team, bunch of guys, a couple other Canadians, a bunch of guys from Northern Kentucky, really good players, but a really competitive team. We did really well. We used to, you know, win a lot of tournaments, and it was hard to even just sort of make the travel team, and just had a really great experience, and, you know, got better there, but played with enough guys that I knew like this wasn't going to, you know, I had no sort of pro aspirations or anything. If I could keep it around par, that was a good day. 75, I'd be happy with. So, that was kind of golf for me. And then once I graduated, I stopped playing for a number of years. I got interested in some other things, and I had enjoyed golf because it was sort of a summer thing. And when playing college golf, it's a year round sport, and maybe it was like a bit more than I had sort of bargained for or could handle. So I put it on the shelf for a while, and that was great because I eventually missed it. And once I came back to it, I kind of got into it even more. Mm-hmm. You know, I was sort of playing locally at, we got this Club EG. They allow you access to, you know, 30 or 40 golf courses. So I was a part of that, and I loved the variety. And then eventually I went back to the club where I played my last couple of years of junior golf, the Royal Ottawa. Just an amazing golf course, and it's just right across the river. I bike there. You know, I'm there in 10 minutes. Golf course is incredible. It's got 27 holes, and that was part of it. I'd been started a couple of other ventures, and I just was finding it was hard to find time for golf. And there's 27 holes there. There's a, what they call a Royal Nine, and it's never that busy. So you can usually head over, you can even just play a couple holes. And that's what kind of got me back into it. And eventually kind of the genesis of Red Rooster started from there.
Really? Wow. I mean, Kentuckians and Canadians, I'm sure you're all incredibly well behaved during your time in college. Yeah.
It was a blast. I mean, we had so much fun. You know, you're on this 15 seater bus, you know, you're traveling around really the country, you know, like we would have long bus rides, and the camaraderie like that. That was the one thing about college golf that was really cool. That's a team game. You know, five players play, you count four scores every day. Everybody's rooting for each other. I really enjoyed that team aspect, but on the, you know, the bus playing euchre and, you know, the late night antics and stuff. I mean, we could write a book. I mean, it was a wild time. Just, it was pretty wild. And the guys were so great. Like I just, you know, really fond memories. Those are probably like the best 4 years of my life.
Mm. Yeah. For those out there who aren't Canadian, euchre is an incredible card game that you should definitely take up. A lot of fun. So then you end up at UGA and get your master's there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I actually started at UNC Charlotte, and then I pivoted over. I had this assistantship. I was teaching. I was sort of a teacher's assistant for a business strategy game, and I was working with this amazing professor, and he could just see that like there was, Charlotte's a banking town, and there was a big finance focus there, and that was kind of like a gap in my resume, and that's why I ended up there. But this prof, he encouraged me to shift over to University of Georgia. They had the best entrepreneurship program, and he could just see that I was a guy who had a lot of ideas and wanted to kind of work for myself. So that was a great suggestion, because I pivoted over to University of Georgia, their MBA program. It was exceptional. And we got to do create businesses essentially, and then travel to these business plan competitions and pitch them. And we ended up winning most of those. We had a vocal smoke detector, and that had a patent and would wake kids that wouldn't normally wake. And just, I think it was just like the business planning, the pitching, coming up with the marketing strategies. And then of course, like going to these business plan competitions, you'd get your ideas kind of ripped to shreds by all these venture capitalists. So it was a great time. It was a great experience, but it really, in a lot of ways, kind of like, planted the seed for Red Rooster down the line. And I used to play we were so lucky at University of Georgia. They have an amazing golf course. You know, they've played Corn Ferry events there, and obviously amazing team, but the facilities and everything were amazing. And it was super cheap. I think I used to pay like $15 to play this golf course. Wow. And, so I used to play a lot, and I hooked a lot of guys in the MBA program to just kind of like get into it. So I kind of kept the interest alive while I was there. Didn't have a whole lot of money, but didn't need it to play. And that's the beauty of golf, right? You know, it's just this range of access.
Yeah. Well, let's fast forward a little bit. I know there's a pretty solid gap there where you did quite a bit in the business atmosphere, but let's get to Red Rooster, because I think everyone's really curious about that component of your story. How did it come about? Why did you think, hey, we need another golf club in the market?
So in playing college golf, we've got everything for free, you know, balls, gloves, all the gear, right? So I took care of my gloves in college, and but I think once I got out of college and I didn't get the free gloves anymore, I will admit I was pretty cheap and stingy with golf gloves. I used to wear them too long, and I actually didn't know fit that well, which is somewhat surprising for a college golfer. It was a trip. So Brad Fritch is a good friend of mine from junior golf days, and we had kept in touch and watched his rise. It was so fun to watch him. You know, he ended up playing 3 years on the PGA Tour. You know, he started on the Canadian Tour, got onto the Corn Ferry. He won some pro events. You know, he was in the mix in a couple of really big tournaments on the PGA Tours. That was great. And he's a great guy, and he's super smart. And so he organized this buddy's golf trip down to Pinehurst area, obviously incredible golf there. So I fly down there and two other friends from junior golf, and we're on the first tee at, you know, a high end golf course. And we've spent a lot of money to be there. And I haven't given a single thought to golf gloves. And I watched like Brad pulls out, you know, a brand new glove out of his bag and puts it on. And that's just what a pro does. Brad doesn't know, you know, how to step on the first. He's not getting a glove even used yesterday. You know, that's just, you know, sort of pro mentality is like, this is how a round starts. Because they're playing for keeps, right? And so I pull this like multicolored gold glove from last year out of the bag. Now, admittedly, this was my first round of the year, but it's not a good excuse. And all three guys just sort of look at me sideways, like, what are you thinking? They all, even the two other guys who are just, you know, top amateurs, they have fresh gloves, but I don't. And so, you know, they take the piss out of me, and, you know, and we move on. But it did plant the seed. I do remember I was just kind of like, why would I do that? I've spent so much money to be here, but I didn't spend anything on golf gloves. And I remember just talking with Brad. Brad was like, you know, that's just silly, because we're here to play well. You want to have confidence. You know, there's a lot of preparation. Like first tee is a big deal, and I had completely whiffed on it. I didn't sort of come up with the idea there, but I did question it and just go, you know, and I started investing in gloves from there. And I started, you know, learning a little bit more, because I just sort of realized like that was a bit of a gap. And then I think the reality is like, I'm not alone. there's a lot of golfers who treat gloves like that. You know, they spend a lot of money on equipment. They've got the latest drivers and irons and wedges, and people are spending $500 and $600, $700 on putters, right? And then the golf gloves, you know, you're going to wear it probably 40, 50 times in the round. And most golfers have one that's old and worn and not doing them any favors. And it's usually too big. So it's one of these things that golfers just don't typically invest in. Some do, but we've seen over time that it's a bit underappreciated. And so that sort of planted that seed that, like, hey, could we create some awareness around this particular piece of equipment? And then we thought, could we make something that's a bit more durable? You know, Brad would admittedly wear a glove for a round, then he sign it and give it to a kid, right? And maybe he might wear it for warm up the next day, but, you know, the high end, you know, gloves are paper thin, and they're only built for a couple rounds. But when you spend $30 on a glove, you want to milk it. So you try to get like 8 or 10 rounds out of it, but it is literally built for a pro. And so those pros are just going to play, you know, 1 to 2 rounds with it, you know, max. And so that was kind of the planted the seed that, like, you know, and Brad would admit in the pro-ams, he's like, it's shocking how many guys have spent thousands of dollars just to be in the program pro-am and have thousands of dollars of equipment and have an old glove.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're talking through pretty much everyone listening. Like, we are all guilty of having the grimiest looking glove in our bag to the point where you feel like you need to wash your hands once you take it off. We're all guilty of it. Yeah. On PHP, on the community, there's always a conversation. What's the most annoying thing to buy? And the amount of people that don't enjoy buying gloves is a really interesting thing. It's like, why do you like buying a driver, but you hate getting a glove? There's just such a weird perspective there. So listen, man, you're not alone by any stretch. You're basically talking into our souls right now about the stanky glove phenomenon that goes on in golf.
Yeah. Yeah. It's strange. I sort of likened it to, and then the other experience is typically when you need one, it's at the last minute. And it's like getting that windshield washer fluid at the gas station, you know, and you need it. And it's expensive at that point, and it sucks, right?
Like, cheap,
and
so, yeah.
And usually that, like, when you need to go and replace a glove, you got to run into the pro shop, and maybe you feel like you're overpaying, and it's not that pleasant experience because we don't plan properly. And so that's kind of how our subscription service came about, just that idea. It literally was, I remember when I wrote down the idea, I said, like, you can't be trusted to change your golf glove often enough.
It's, you know, so true.
You just can't. I couldn't be trusted. So it needed to be that the subscription service is, you know, it's been super popular. We have over 2,000 subscribers on it, but it is meant to be like a tool. Like, that glove comes, and when it comes, it's a reminder of, like, check your bag. Like, is that glove done? Mm. Probably. Mm. It's time to just move on. You know, like, you don't have to milk another couple of rounds. This thing is sliding. It's grimy. It's, you know, there's nothing better too than, like, sliding on that fresh glove. Like, the first round you play with that is the best round you'll play with it. It's diminishing returns from there. And it's just a matter of, like, when do you decide to move on to that fresh glove again and give yourself a treat?
Mm. Yeah. And the price of gloves aren't crazy. I mean, certainly they're getting up there a little bit in the hyper premium space, but, you know, look at the price of a cart fee or the beers after a round. Like, it's just, I think the challenge here, Kerry, is like getting that mental space around it. And I look at a lot of things, like, if I get on a subscription service, that's a sunk cost, man. I'm paying for Netflix, whether I watch it or not.
Yeah.
Like, golf glove shows up. It's like, oh, I paid for that, but I'm happy about it. You know?
it's a treat. Interesting. It is. And, you know, we we try to make it as pleasure as possible. The other thing is the reality is the subscription service is like, you need a wide range of gloves. You know, if you play golf, you know, so we've built a glove called the Range Rooster. It's built for practice. We've got our rain gloves, you know, we've got our cart mitts. We do have that tournament glove. We have that glove that, you know, doesn't last quite as long, but it's paper thin for like those bucket list rounds or competitive rounds. You know, we have some colored gloves. We have some, a performance line. So that's the other thing is like, depending on when and where you're playing and how you're playing, whether it's indoors or practice, or maybe it's just, you know, a fun round, maybe it's a tournament, you kind of want to have a wide range of gloves to choose from to fit the activity.
Wow. I had no idea, honestly, that you had a lot of variety in your glove space. I'd love to break into that a little bit.
Sure.
Talking about how you started, I assume. So you did start on Kickstarter, which went pretty nuts, if I understand correctly.
And yeah, it did well. We did. We launched with a Kickstarter. We sold 2,500 gloves in 30 days, raised about $75,000. It really just validated the concept. We were like, yeah, we're really onto something. And that was very much the subscription service. It was sort of front and center. And I would say it was sort of good timing for it. It was both building a high quality glove. So we had gone to the manufacturer and I'd learned everything about how golf gloves are made. It blew my mind. I thought there'd be like a glove making machine or something, you know. It's beautiful leather, right? Super soft leather. And it is all hand cut and hand sewn. So like, I encourage everybody, like next time you're playing golf, like look at that golf glove, you will see like those seams are sewn on a sewing machine. And you'll see like, it's very crafty. And but when I went over there, I noticed that like getting the best grade of leather, that's actually not as hard as you'd think it is, because most of the top brands don't touch it. They're happy to get like, to go down the ladder. They want to save 10 cents because they make so many gloves and it all sort of adds to their bottom line. We want to get the very best, softest leather. And then you have to thin it. It goes through these thinning machines. And we came up with this concept of like, and it's funny, we're talking about baseball. So like, baseball gloves are made from sheepskin, just like golf gloves. It's just that they're a thicker grade, right? So they go through the thinning machine, fewer passes. You know, a batting glove is like a 0.8 with like calipers, and a good golf glove is about roughly half of that. So it's sort of twice as thin as a batting glove, as you might imagine. And so what we did is, our concept was, let's put it through one fewer passes through that thinning machine, and let's see if that still feels super soft. But wouldn't that last a few rounds longer? And don't we expect to at least get 8, 10, 12 rounds out of a golf glove? Yes, we do, right? And so could we build something that would actually meet our expectations? And that's basically what the Kickstarter was built around. That's what that glove was. Came in a variety of colors. And then it was the subscription, because we said, like, you can't be trusted to change your glove. This subscription is meant to be helpful, that a glove shows up whenever you need it. You can adjust it. It's monthly, it's bi-monthly, it's quarterly, it's once a year if you want, like depending on how often you play. And you can skip shipments, you can adjust timelines, you can, you're in control. But it was meant to be to solve that problem of, do a little bit of preparation. Here's someone, you know, chattering in your ear about golf gloves, trying to be your friend, so that you don't end up on that first tee where you've got to run back to the pro shop and overpay. That's basically what that Kickstarter was built around. And then it was our give back, which is our Play It Forward program, where we donate gloves to youth golf programs. And kind of combination of those three things is what the Kickstarter was built around. And it really resonated.
So was that the feather gloves, or a specific glove that started it all?
That's right. It was the feather.
Perfect. That's a hell of a guess in my perspective right there. Is that like you had mentioned, there are tournament tier ultra premiums. I assume that's like the Sussex.
It is. And that's Sussex.
So there's an understanding of You want that ultimate feel, like your hands connected to the grip just a hair more. I assume that's another pass on the machine kind of thing.
That's the one more pass. And so what happened is, after a year, we had, you know, lots of really happy customers. I mean, we came kind of flying out of the gate. The first year we had also launched the Range Rooster, which was our stretchy synthetic. I've actually got it here.
Nice.
This is the glove that, like, and this is just from working with this amazing partner. I could see all these different materials that were largely being used in Asia, and you really weren't seeing this type of material. Like, it feels almost like a stretchy suede.
Oh,
but it is this thing you can wash. You can wash it in the dishwasher. You can wash it in the washing machine, and it is built for practice. Like, it's built to take like thousands of, like, I love to hit balls on the range. But, you know, you're usually using like an old, like, you would blow through leather gloves on a hot day if you're going to, if you don't have something that's sort of prepared. So this was meant to kind of like save those soft leather gloves for the course. And it was between that and the feather line. They came in different colors, but essentially like the comb, the saddle, the Scott Silver, which are red, black, and gray, they were the same grade of leather and the same caliper and thickness.
Interesting.
So we got all this, you know, great feedback. We came first and second in my Golf Spies glove review in our first year, right out of the gate. So all these Kickstarter supporters, who they were like, I think these gloves are really good. And then they were like, oh, I guess they are. That validation really helped. And then the only negative feedback we would get is guys would be like, man, these gloves won't die. Like, they last forever, but they admittedly aren't like the ultimate feel. And so, in our second year, we launched the Sussex, which is our thinnest, softest glove. It's also our most expensive glove, and it's our number one seller. So,
oh, really? Okay.
So we closed that gap because we sort of felt like we had to. We wanted to be, the brand's built around super soft leather that's durable. And then we shored up this possible weakness, which was, here's super soft leather that isn't quite as durable, but has the ultimate feel. We had this practice glove. You know, we eventually launched the rain gloves. We started filling these gaps because our subscribers, we didn't want them to have to leave Red Rooster to get any glove they might need for any golf activity.
So I'm curious about, because you have these different profiles, they're undoubtedly will provide a subtle variance in the experience for golfers as they go to play. Is there complaints or concerns that are either unrealistic or you have to talk people out of them as they go, like, hey, use this glove in the range, you're going to love it, it's going to help you a lot, it's going to let the glove you want to use in the course last way longer. But then they come back and say, well, what if it feels differently? I can't practice with something that feels different.
I totally agree. That's why, in fact, a lot of the Range Rooster is our number three seller. So our number one is the Sussex, the thinnest, softest glove. Number two is the Cape, which is, I've got it here. This was the glove that won my Golf Spies glove review. So it is the same. It is basically the feather with a bit of stretch through the knuckles.
Okay. Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
Right. And that's, it's really popular, super durable. But it became popular because, like, there's a variety of hand sizes. So that's what we started to realize too, is that, like, a lot of golfers are wearing gloves that don't fit. If your glove is too big, you will blow through it much faster because it's sliding around. It can sort of tear more easily, which is a big issue. That's more of a grip issue, as we've sort of learned over time. Like, most golfers wear their glove, the wear happens right here in the sort of heel. Mm-hmm. And it's because they're holding the club through the palm instead of in the fingers. And so that's that big wear pattern. A lot of golfers get a lot of wear. So that's where what became really, we didn't realize, like, how many golf gloves were tearing. And we would get That's why having that slightly thicker, heavier weight of leather would hold up better, right? For sort of grip issues, etc. So it just held up better for those sort of wear patterns.
So what's that challenge like when you have someone who's absolutely interested but are super unsure what the correct fit is for them? What's the solution for them?
Typically, so we have a really detailed fitting guide.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have never heard of cadet sizing. So our gloves come, when you include our youth gloves, our gloves come in 36 sizes, which kind of like blows people's minds.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, right? So that's from double XL men's through women's into youth. So we have four youth sizes. We have three women's sizes, and then there's 11 men's sizes in right and left hand. And then there's regular sizes for men, and there is cadet. So cadet is I have a very symmetrical hand. I'm a regular. I wear a men's small regular, although I used to wear a men's medium for years, all through college and everything. So I was sort of the typical guy who's wearing a glove that's, you know, at least a size too big, often two sizes too big. And so most people have never heard of cadet. It's a bad name. I don't know who came up with it, but it doesn't speak to what that glove is, which is slightly shorter fingers and a wider palm.
Mm.
And there's a lot of hands that are shaped like that. They need cadet sizing. And so we offer the widest range of sizes in golf, like period, end of story. We carry more sizes than Titleist. Titleist doesn't carry right hand cadet, and we do. And so I think that's sort of the big thing is sizing is you got to try some sizes, you know, so we offer free exchanges, free returns. When someone's in doubt, we often say, consider going down a size. A glove should fit, you know, it should fit like a second skin. It should almost be like when you watch, you know, if you ever watch a pro put on, they're like pulling the fingers down like a surgeon, you know, and that's how it should be. If you can slide the glove on the first time, it's too big. The other key telltale in as far as fitting goes, and I've just got this glove strap. If ever you see the first time you put that glove strap, it shouldn't be able to totally close on the Velcro, because the glove is that soft leather is going to stretch out over the next couple of rounds, and you want to give yourself a little bit of that space. If ever you see this move where like that, you probably see where that strap is way over, that means like it didn't fit it for it's clearly doesn't fit. It's, you know, at least a size or two too big. So offering the free exchanges and really kind of like offering this guide and having conversations, you know, our live chat's super busy. People have a lot of questions about golf. Like, you know, they don't understand cadet sizing, and we encourage them to try them if they have, you know, an irregular sized hand. And you can see when you go to our sizing guide, they show pictures and people identify, they go, oh, I am a cadet. My palm is slightly wider than normal. I need that extra space. So it's been a bit of a learning curve. The free exchanges part, I think, has helped people like take the confidence that like, hey, if this doesn't fit, I can return it, and we happily exchange. And we really work hard. Like we want to get you into the right fit. And if we can do that and help that, A, we know you're going to be back, but you're going to play better if you get a glove that fits. So we typically say go down a size. We do a lot of glove fittings at events. So we'll be on, let's say, the first tee. And as these typically tournaments, and as they're blowing through, they come through our booth and they get fit for a free glove. They love it. It's great. That's sort of like the tee gift for the day. And I would say, and this is not an exaggeration, but I would say 60 to 70% of the time that golfer leaves with a golf glove other than the size they're currently wearing.
Wow.
And it is
<That's> bad.
And no one, not one. I have fit thousands of people. I have never had to convince somebody to go up a size.
Really?
Never. That makes sense. Always going down. The glove is always too big. The funny thing is, especially with guys, if we do a survey before we go to the golf course and we say, hey, trying to get a sense of sizing, what size do you think guys are going to say their hand is?
Large or medium large, probably.
Large.
Yeah.
The whole survey is large.
Yeah.
I'm a men's small. And so guys come up and they're like, I'll take a large. And I'm like, put your hand next to mine. It's like virtually identical. I'm like, you are off by three sizes, you know? And often guys, like sometimes I can't even convince them to take a small, like they don't want it.
like a different high. Yeah.
Mentally, they don't want to be a men's small. And so they have a glove that doesn't fit them because they're just like, can't get out of their own way, but it typically is, they think of shirt size or different things. Like they're not thinking like you can be, I've seen, you know, the biggest hands I've seen are sometimes on like the smallest guys. You'd be surprised. Like it's not, you know, you know, just cause you're 6'5" doesn't mean like you're going to be a double XL necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so it is just sort of like getting that proper fit. And once you get a glove that is, you know, it should be almost uncomfortable the first time you get it on because it's going to stretch. Most people don't want to do that. They want it to kind of like fit like a typical glove. But I'm like, hey, you're not driving a car with this thing, right? You're playing golf. This thing should be a second skin. It should be really tight.
Right.
So I think that's the hardest part, is convincing people to go down a size, to put on a glove that feels tight at first. Because by round two or three, it's stretched out a little bit and it's perfect, as opposed to it was a little too big at first. By rounds two or three, it's getting sloppy.
Yeah. Tell me about the decision to go with the rain gloves and how much different that experience was. Cause you're obviously working with different situations, different, conditions that go into it. Is it a totally different leather process?
Yeah. So here's our rain glove, the rain rooster. It
looks sick, by the way. Very, very cool looking.
Yeah. It was fun. This was one, I have to give a lot of credit to Brad. So Brad, you know, he played on the PGA Tour. And he tells a story of the one time he wore rain gloves. He like put the rain gloves on. He actually put two gloves on. It was raining really hard. He hit like a duck hook and he like put them away. Like pros will blow through eight leather gloves on a rainy day instead of wearing what's in the marketplace for rain gloves, because they are built for rain. They're not built for performance. Hmm. You know, most of them don't even keep your hands dry. They are super thick and it's a totally different experience. You're sort of like playing to survive. You're not playing for score. And that's very telling, right? Like if touring pros don't wear rain gloves and we try to sort of emulate everything that they do, like, why is that? And basically Brad was like, because they all suck. Right. And so we built this glove. It was built for performance. So it was built around that idea. So it's all synthetics. It was kind of built. Our product designer was a diver. So it's got some of these neoprene elements, things to kind of like survive in the, you know, tough weather, really stretchy, but paper thin on this side. We ended up using these silicone roosters. That's what gives it the tack. Mm. But we wanted the material to be really thin. We wanted ultimate feel so that you could play in the rain, survive, but score. And so we went through like five iterations on that glove. We even missed our window of launching it. We didn't end up the year we launched it. We didn't launch it till like the end of the year because of the sort of prototyping can take months. Right. But I feel like we really got it right. We typically win best rain glove with My Golf Spy. It's super popular. Every golfer should have a set of rain gloves in their bag. Like it may only rain for a couple of holes during a round, but you should always be prepared for it. I know a lot of golfers, like I love playing in the rain. It doesn't bother me, but lots of people, if rain's in the forecast, they'll cancel the tee time. But even if you're, you know, if you're ever playing golf, you will be playing in the rain. You should be prepared.
Hmm. What about colder weather? I know you talk a lot about performance, and any cold weather golf glove I've ever put on completely eliminates the performance aspect of the experience. But there are plenty of guys who want to go past the hot hands phase of, you know, cold weather golf. Are you looking into that? What's the thought there?
Yeah, we took a pass on the winter glove. Again, no feel. Yes, your hand will be warmer. You're surviving. You're playing a different game. So our solution to that was the cart mitt.
Okay.
So we developed a really good cart mitt. That's what I like. I remember when I played in college, we had the, like, we used to borrow the, you know, the hand warmer that the quarterbacks wear.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
And we just slide it around to the back. When you hit, you just, what you want to do is you want to keep your hands warm in between shots and have a good golf glove on. The cart mitts are amazing. You can have a golf glove on underneath, right? Mm. Ours are amazing. I don't have them here, but they're waterproof. They actually allow for a hot pocket to go in. Got amazing fleece lining and they're super warm and they're big enough so that you can push that cart, you can drive that cart, you can just walk with them. You want to keep your hands warm and then you want to have a good glove on. For us, that's the solution for cold weather. In fact, I wear them a lot because you often see guys with like hands in pockets and stuff. It's just like, just get a pair of cart mitts and, you know, walk around. Like if your hands are warm, you know, you're going to play much better. And if your hands are cold, golf's a lot harder. So cart mitts are really important. Again, that's one of those things I think everybody should have. And often, like, it doesn't have to be below zero to put them on. You know, if it's a little chilly, your hands will be a little bit cold and that won't help you.
Yeah. Kerry, tell me about limited edition stuff, because I mean, we live in a golfing world where limited edition head covers or shoes or, you know, whatever it may be, that I'm assuming with 30 plus sizes, that's a bit more of a challenge for you guys, but it looks to me like you are tackling it in some sort of way.
Yeah. This is actually one of my favorite gloves, the Patriot. We launched this right around July 4th.
Okay.
We do a lot of limited edition stuff and it's just fun. Right. So when we do a glove like this, we won't carry it in all 30 sizes.
Okay.
You know, gotcha. And let's say our typical drop is like 100 golf gloves. And because we've sold hundreds of thousands of gloves, we have really good data on what that distribution is going to look like. And we will literally play to the, like, hey, these are the most popular sizes. Here's how these 100 gloves fly out the fastest. We do try to stretch that out a little bit because we recognize that, like, we do have, you know, lots of female customers and lots of lefties. And so, you know, we take that into consideration, but in general, we kind of build for limited editions. We're not typically carrying all 30 sizes.
Gotcha. I saw something on the website. I'm not super familiar with it's the Simster. It's this indoor golf glove. I can't imagine what that possibly means, but I hope you tell me.
Okay, so I was at the PGA show. This is 2 years ago, and I remember sitting in a seminar, and just the key takeaway was indoor golf has eclipsed outdoor golf for participation. Now, obviously, like, there's lots of crossover. If you're an indoor golfer, you're also an outdoor golfer. They almost get, like, sort of double counted. But, you know, I don't know about you, but, like, I do love a TrackMan session. Like, it's you know, the technology is so great. It's not just TrackMan, right? All this great indoor technology. So it's fun. It's time boxed. Within an hour, I can play by myself. I can play Pebble Beach. And or I can have an amazing practice session with incredible feedback. And so I can see why that sort of exploded. Lots of these indoor places are popping up everywhere and they're all super busy. And so again, just sort of like being the glove snob, I sort of looked at like what am I doing in an indoor? I was using the Range Rooster, which is sort of built for practice. And, I often would see, and I would look around and see, I would often see like older gloves. Like, people aren't sliding on a brand new leather glove for an indoor session, even if you're playing in a league. So they're sort of doing themselves a bit of a disservice. Lots of them have never heard of this kind of like Range Rooster. And I love the Range Rooster. It's an amazing glove, but the difference between what we did sort of, so here's the Simster and here's the Range Rooster. They're both synthetics. The Range Rooster is like kind of paper thin, almost emulates the Sussex in terms of its feel. Incredible feel. But because of that, and it's pretty stretchy, it will eventually stretch out. We're talking after like thousands of rounds. Like this glove will last you a season, but it will eventually sort of wear out, and it kind of gets stops sort of like coming back. I mean, obviously leather happens fast and after hundreds of balls. So what we did with the Simster is we tried 7 different synthetics. And so sort of ran the gamut from being like bomb proof, durable, like this glove won't quit, to paper thin, incredible feel. Right. And then this one was sort of like, as you moved up that ladder from, let's say 1 was paper thin and 7 was, you know, construction glove, you know, material, worked it back. This was a 3.
Okay.
So it was like really good feel. We tried to basically replicate the feather, you know, really good feel, incredible durability. So that this glove is really built for, we want to say like, this is for your indoor season. Grab yourself the Simster. You're good. You will not blow through this glove through the season. You'll be able to hit thousands of balls. It's just a little bit more, it has a little less feel than the Range Rooster. So it has a little bit more durability. It doesn't stretch out as much. It holds its shape. We're finding like lots of golfers now that they love it so much that they're using it on the course. Right. And of course, lots of people use the Range Rooster, that's their glove, right? It doesn't just have to be for practice. It's just that it's really, really durable.
Yeah. And a little bit more feel than that crusty glove you're pulling out of the side pocket as Carrie continues to talk into our soul.
Yeah.
I love the idea that these have categories to go with it, right? It doesn't say this is your glove. This is the only glove you should use. You got to get really comfortable with this. You're creating scenarios where golfers can experience exactly what they're looking for in that moment. And I'm super guilty of it. I think most people listening to the show are absolutely guilty of, when you go to a sim session, let's say you go to like a Top Golf or, you know, with buddies, the last thing you're doing is pulling out either range specific glove or a glove that has any sort of life left in it. Like, you're not pulling out the freshie for Top Golf with the boys.
For sure.
So I'm incredibly curious about the Simster. I think it'll be a lot of fun seeing people react to that. And now that we're starting to pull back the layers a little bit, understanding that there are different evolutions to this sort of glove styling that can really support players' games depending on what they want to do that day. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. The Simster's been amazing. I mean, we're starting to move into retail. So we are selling in some golf courses. We make custom gloves. That's been a huge part of our business. You know, so we can, instead of the Red Rooster logo here, we can sort of do anything. We do a silicone, you know, looks like a raised rubber application. So you can do some incredible detail on branding, obviously coloring, those types of things. But as we sort of keep looking at we always think of our subscription base, right? And so we saw that, like, hey, if golf is moving in this sort of like indoor direction, it just means that like golfers will do green grass and indoor at some point. To your point, they're not likely using a proper glove for that activity. How could we serve them? So we built something that we think is a purpose built for that activity that also transfers to the course. You know, we have lots of people who wear the Simster indoors and outdoors. Great, right? We just, that's better than just an old ratty, you know, used glove, because like you say, you're just not going to use a freshie for those activities, but also, you know, indoor golf's great. You deserve something that's going to be purpose built for it, so you get the most out of it.
Well, I'll tell you what, you keep coming on the show and talking to me like this, I might have to. I'm not under the impression I have a choice anymore, Kerry.
Maybe not.
What a fun exploration of the brand. I mean, you guys have clearly evolved a ton since your inception. I remember the Kickstarter pretty well. The Red Rooster logo is not something I think is quick to forget, which I think is really good for you guys. It's great. Is there anything else you want to share that might be coming down the pipe or that we haven't explored yet? We've walked through the great fitting program you guys have on your website, subscription-based stuff, which sounds like it's a big deal for you guys. Anything else?
Well, I think specifically for your audience, and this has been something that's been really helpful for us. So like when we launched the Sussex, we did a lot of beta testing. So we tried a number of different, not grades of leather, but thicknesses to try to figure out that, like, we wanted it to be thin. We wanted it to have ultimate performance, but when you go too thin, the gloves tear, right? So there's this, you have to sort of, walk the line. That it's a very fine line. So that beta testing was huge for us. And I think it's one of the reasons why the Sussex has become so popular is, you know, we put that out into the ecosystem and said, who can raise their hand? Who can help us get this right? We don't, you know, pretend to have all the answers, but we will often have a good idea. And then we need a community to help us kind of like fine tune it. Everything we've launched has been community tested.
Interesting.
So that's what happened with the Simster. I remember when we were testing the Simster, like I said, we had seven different,
Versions of it. Yeah. Okay.
You know, and there was a few, we knew we weren't going to go paper thin. We knew we weren't going to go super thick. So you could whittle it down to probably three finalists. And between those three finalists, the beta testing really helped us figure out which of those was that perfect mix of like good feel, ultimate durability. And, we'll continue to do that. You know, we have a lot of new products coming out in 2026. We're heading to the PGA show. We've doubled our booth space this year. We're launching a golf bag next year. We just launched a golf vest, a fall golf vest, waterproof, windproof, incredible. We're getting into apparel, polos, hoodies, vests, t-shirts. And all of that stuff we want vetted by the community to just sort of like make sure, because there's so many options. You know, whenever we look at everything, we were like, everybody needs a good golf vest. It doesn't have to cost like an arm and a leg. I think ours is super affordable, but we wanted to build something that was incredible, right? So, and we don't make that much of something. We just want to make like the best product. Okay. And so we're going to be doing a lot of community testing, and we want to tap into the community to say, like, you know, raise your hand if you're willing to help us get this right.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's what an adventure. I can definitely see those, like, hey, we've done this, so let's add this. I just going through the website, you can tell, like, oh, let's add something like that. And it's funny to listen to you say, like, golf bag and vest. Like, you can tell there's this desire to just solve a lot of big problems for golfers, you know, just starting with the glove and expanding from there, which is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it's fun. Like, obviously I love this. It's so nice to do, you know, something in golf. It's a game that I'm really passionate about. And, you know, and we haven't touched on our Play It Forward program. So we donate gloves to youth golf programs. It's typically those intro to golf programs where the kids show up and they don't have a glove, right? They don't even sort of like know they need one. Or they have a hard time finding one that fits. So we have the smallest glove in golf. It's an extra small youth. That glove is called the Rook. It's built from the same materials as the Range Rooster. It's super durable. So these kids don't have to blow through, you know, leather golf gloves. But it's meant to be that like welcome to the game that can be somewhat intimidating. They show up to this, you know, intro to golf or golf 101 or a camp, and, you know, the instructors have gloves and we don't want to feel left out. So that concept has been great. That's our give back. That's a lot of fun. We work with lots of different organizations. They're typically customers who love our product, who know about our Play It Forward program, who know about, you know, a camp who can use those. So that's been really satisfying. So there's been a lot of aspects of just being in the golf industry and doing something that I'm passionate about and love. And I think it really helps us as we, you know, and we have this great customer base. Like, they're super thoughtful. They're kind, they're willing to, they give us great feedback. They give us a pass when we get some stuff wrong. That's been really rewarding too. Like, we have amazing customers. They're just, can't say enough about how, supportive they are.
Great. Well, Kerry, thanks for taking the time today. It was super fun to get to know the brand a bit more. And I'm excited to see how you guys evolve. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. We appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, if you guys are playing golf this weekend, do not, and I mean this, Kerry will find you. Do not pull that crusty old glove out of your bag. Go check out Red Rooster Golf and see if the subscription service works for you guys. And we'll see you next week. Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, Don Brown back here at Shaft University, talking about my favorite subject today, me. So the question was, what shafts am I currently playing? So let's run through the bag. So in my driver, I've got the brand new Denali Frost Black. So this is our second generation of Denali, and this uses our Frost technology, which moves around in the shaft depending on what characteristic we're trying to modify. So in the black, we've got extra torsion material down here at the tip end, really helps with counteracting rotation on off-center hits. Low launch, low spin shaft, just like the previous Denali Black. In my faithful mini driver, I've got the new Denali Frost Blue. So again, similar technology to what we've got in the Denali Frost Black, more of a mid-launch shaft, mid-spin. We've moved that stability material a little further up to give you a little more feel down at the tip section. In my trusty 9-wood, I mean, if you don't have a 9-wood by now, are you even a THP golfer? In this one, we got the good old Hazardous Black. I chose this one because all I want out of this club is ultimate stability, ultimate consistency. I'm not trying to get fancy. I just want the ball to go high and straight and far. In the irons, Dynamic Gold Mid. Really fell in love with these. I used to be a PXIO guy, but I moved on to DG Mid. Just a little bit higher launch for me, a little bit better feel. If you guys haven't hit these yet, it seems impossible because they're almost everywhere, but if you haven't, you should really go give them a try. Just a little more launch and spin you get from traditional Dynamic Gold, but something everybody's really been enjoying. And last but not least, the wedges. Or even the Boss, if you don't have custom painted purple and gold UW wedge shafts, no you're not. I actually made these for myself probably about 10 years ago, and we've actually got a couple UW alumni on the PGA Tour who saw these on our social media and play them now. If you went to UW, reach out, and you still can't get any because there's only about 20 of these left. Anyways, guys, that's what's in my bag. Log on below and tell me what's in yours.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.